Welcome to the Plant Grow REIT podcast.
Right. Welcome back to Plant Grow REIT. I'm Chelsea, and today I am joined by a very special guest. We have a TEDx speaker, author, advocate, and leadership strategist, Jill Riley. Welcome, Jill. Firstly, it is incredibly wonderful to have you on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Chelsea. It's great to be here.
It seems a little bit impossible to sort of sum up what you do in a sentence. How do you normally introduce yourself to people who you have not met before?
That's a great way of framing it. I guess the simplest summary would be that I've spent most of my career helping people navigate really profound change.
Yeah.
So at a very early age, I left the Midwest U.S. You can hear there's still remnants of an American accent here.
Yeah.
To go to South Africa when they were on the edge of their first democratic election. Mm-hmm. And that sort of started a lifetime career in, helping people, being present when people are going through really profound change. In that case, obviously, it was sort of the end of apartheid, the shift to democracy. And I was supposed to go home after 6 months, but I wasn't having any of that. It was way too interesting and exciting for me to go back to my conventional life. So I stayed, and that kicked off a sort of career in Africa, from South Africa to Mozambique, kind of post-conflict situations, to Zimbabwe then at the height of their AIDS epidemic. And in every situation, it was people being confronted with having to change, wanting to change. And it was a pretty, tremendous education in sort of how we help people evolve and adapt, whether by desire or by necessity. And at a very early age, I learned a lot about what works and what doesn't. And so, that carried on throughout my life. And obviously now I've taken a lot of that learning to the book that I'm releasing in September called The 10 Permissions, which, it really speaks to this moment where I think we are being asked to change and grow at in a way that many of us are not prepared for. So, it's sort of being present to change and trying to help people navigate it.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it's a extremely, it's an incredible thing to spend your life doing, and supporting people in those extremely complex but human moments in their life and helping them navigate that change. I'm interested to know, because you have had so much experience across vast, like a different array of countries, continents, everything. Is there major differences culturally, or are we all essentially struggling with the same thing when it gets down to the foundations?
I would say yes, we are. I think it's one of the things that I feel is an enduring lesson for me that, whether I was sitting under a tree in a village in Kenya, around a table with communities at war in Kosovo, or in a boardroom in New York, people are people.
Yeah.
And we are all, really trying to protect our own security. We're all sort of wired in very similar ways. And, there's something that's very reassuring about that, because it means that, maybe the differences that we perceive as driving us apart don't exist quite as deeply as we think they do. On the other hand, it presents really interesting challenges. I think, certainly there are environments that I think restrict people's perceived ability to grow and change. Certain environments are more, to use a common word, conservative, and that, you are sort of told how to behave. And if you don't behave that way, there are punishments for it.
Yes.
So as I talk about in the book, when I was working with women in Zimbabwe around HIV/AIDS, they didn't have a lot of choices. Their own like physical safety was at stake. And for the people in the boardrooms, their physical safety is not at stake. So I think there is privilege of choice that is probably the biggest difference. And I think it's very important for us all to remember that, because I think sometimes we perceive ourselves as, you know, not having a lot of good choices out of fear of consequence, when the consequence often isn't as bad as we make it out in our own heads. But yeah, I would say that would be the major difference, is that, you know, some people have, and especially most of us have, infinite choices right now. And there are a lot of people in the world who don't have many good choices. So how we make choices is a real big theme of the book.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, for you to acknowledge that upfront, I feel like some people get caught up in that when they hear about, like, oh, you know, the 10 permissions is like an operating system for adulthood, and people do tend to come back at that with the privilege argument, and the fact that it's built from seeing that in real life and real time is really important to acknowledge and really powerful.
Yeah, of course. I mean, listen, as I said, I'm not coming at this as a life coach.
No.
and I don't, nothing against life coaches, but I'm not, you know.
No, well, you've worked in a very different, yeah, in a very different field and yeah. environment.
And I guess, you know, the privilege conversation for me is, yes, I think we must acknowledge the privilege of choice.
Yeah.
And with that privilege comes responsibility. So as I say in the book, if you have ample choice, make it, and make it consciously, because there's somebody not far from you who doesn't have those choices, who would do anything to have your choices. So, you know, I'm not under any illusion about who will be buying my book and who will likely be trying to, you know, make sense of their lives at this moment. And those are mostly people who have choices. And so I think we should think about how we use that, not only for, you know, our own benefit, but how we make our best contribution to the world.
Yeah, it's an important thing to reflect on, and I would love to dive into, if you want, the 10 permissions. So you describe it as an operating system for adulthood, which is a compelling way to phrase it, and it really interests me because it really signifies the way that it is at the background, and it is running behind everything else that you do in your life. But before we get into it, what part of the old operating system did you identify that wasn't serving us anymore and we needed that new way of doing things?
Yeah, I mean, as I describe in the book, I think the simplest way to sort of frame it is moving from a very fixed world to a very fluid world. So, you know, the 20th century, most of our parents, grandparents were growing up, was largely predictable, still very hierarchical. The systems and structures held us in place and told us what to do. You know, we had faith in institutions. We had, you know, very fixed ways of understanding how we moved through our adult life. And the rules in that system were fairly, you know, clear, and they kind of worked. It was an if-then system. If you do X, then Y. So if you got let's take, for example, a good degree, then you will get a job, right? Yep. If you are loyal and hardworking, then you will be rewarded with a pension and a gold watch.
Yep.
And so the implicit operating system, and most of it is implicit, it's not like anybody sits you down and says, here's how you need to operate, but you pick it up as you go.
Yeah.
No, the implicit operating system was built around that. So we were, you know, largely compliant. We sought to fit in. We chose largely ready-made roles out of a fairly narrow selection of things, you know, teacher, doctor, lawyer, you know, nurse, blah, 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 blah. And you took those roles, and that was your identity for your life. So your identity within that fixed system was something that you sort of thought it into, and then the goal really was to kind of stay into that, in that, for as long as you could, because that's how you garnered security.
Yeah.
And the point that I'm making is that in a fluid world where almost none of those things is true anymore, we need to think differently about how we garner security for ourselves. So, you know, I think we've all lived through the past 20 years or more of a kind of unraveling. And unraveling for better or for worse. So identity is very fluid.
Yeah.
We don't. Hierarchies have collapsed. Systems are flat. Institutions aren't promising to look after us in the same way that we did. So sort of the social compact, if you will, of I behave this way and society or institutions look after me,
yeah,
is really unraveled.
Mm. Yeah.
We've all been confronting and trying to make sense of. And the point of the book is to say, we're all living with this now. This is not news. I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know. But, you know, are we unconsciously and hesitantly adapting to this new reality? Or are we going to acknowledge it and give ourselves permission to say, okay, the old way of operating that I'm probably still a little bit wired to believe is the best way. Mm-hmm. So I still believe that, you know, if I'm a good boy or girl and get good grades and do good things will happen to me. You know, are we going to consciously and explicitly say, actually, that doesn't serve us anymore. We need a different way of thinking about what good looks like, what security looks like. And, you know, the book is a frame, if you will, for helping people to really shift their mindset around how they do their adult lives.
Yeah.
And allow themselves a different script, because that old script is pretty sticky. You know, it still hangs around in us, telling us what to do. So I really kind of elevated the operating system idea almost to get people to look at like, what is my operating system? How do I operate? Like, do I consciously operate or am I just acting and reacting? It's kind of nudging people to be a little bit more intentional about the choices they make and the ways that they move through their life.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Like it's not necessarily something that people question. Like you said, no one sits you down and goes, not in as many words, this is how the world works. This is what you need to do. It's learnt over time and it's sort of reinforced over time as well. Like you said, you know, you do the right things and you get the reward for it. And so that just sort of continues that cycle over and over. And it seems that the permission from the 10 permission, the permission is to break that cycle and do something different and bring on that new operating system.
Mm. And to not feel, again, so we all, this is happening, but it's happening in a way that I think people still remain very hesitant. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Am I going to be okay? There's still a degree of shame, you know, oh gosh, you know, if I don't have this asset by this age, am I going to look like a failure? You know, there's still a very internalized sense of what a good adult looks like. And I think, you know, the millennials were the first to kind of confront, like, hey, wait a second, my life does not look the way that it said on the label. This is not playing out the way that in my head it was supposed to, or the way my parents did. And I think now, especially with AI, this is getting accelerated of saying we've got to accept that, you know, that sort of timeline and that set of expectations and milestones that went along with it is just so outdated. Yeah. And that young people and people in midlife who right now might be facing the reality of having to reinvent themselves, that there isn't shame attached to that. And that it's a requirement right now to kind of do this differently. So rather than going, oh gosh, you know, I'm worried that I'm somehow behind or I'm somehow weird. Like it's okay. We're all making this up under vastly different circumstances than the ones our parents kind of had to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And when you're talking about things like, you know, doing things a different way and accepting change, obviously one can't help but wonder how the COVID pandemic really accelerated all of these things for you. So where were you at in the 10 permissions sort of journey when COVID hit, and how much did that inform the path that it took for you?
Yeah, great question. I mean, so I had created something called the Explorer's Way.
Yeah.
And that was the same idea. How do we explore uncertainty? That adults need to be, as I say in the book, kind of more explorer and less executive. That, in this world, we've got to figure out how we find our way through stuff that looks very unfamiliar and potentially very weird. Yeah. And then, of course, we got struck with something very unfamiliar and something very weird.
Yes.
And, you know, like the rest of the world, I hunkered down with my two young children, trying to remain sane. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to write because I am a writer. And at the time it was like, I just want to get my IP down for the 10 for, sorry, what was then the Explorer's Way of like, I'm going to do a PDF so that when we come out of this, which, you know, at that point, the mental model was still, and I think this is very important, you know, there will be aberrations and then we will somehow return to normal. Yeah. And I was still at that time thinking normal, the version of normal that I was familiar with would return, which of course it didn't. Yeah. You know, when it comes back, I'll use this PDF for my business. And I just sat down and wrote and wrote and wrote. So that was the start of the 10 permissions. And I had an editor working with me on it who picked up on the fact that permission was a theme, that this moving through life differently requires us to allow ourselves to do that, to deviate, to feel deviant, if you will.
Yeah.
And that you've got to negotiate with yourself and you've got to sort of authorize yourself to do this. And so she helped me sort of elevate the theme of permission and then the permissions that were embedded in there. And so that was sort of where the 10 permissions were born during the massive disruption of COVID. And it's so funny to me that at that time, of course, we weren't even talking about AI.
No.
Crazy as that sounds right now. And so I think what I find myself feeling at the moment is, my gosh, it's only accelerating the sort of sense that I think a lot of us have operated on, or we just have to get through this, whatever this is. And then there'll be a period of stability where we can go back to our, using my language, kind of normal way of operating. I feel like we are losing that completely now and saying, okay, so buckle up.
it's just on to the next thing.
It's just on to the next thing. So, you know, how do you, again, for me, mindset and sort of your set of expectations is so crucial, because it is so easy in this context to just feel like I'm holding on by my fingernails. And in many ways, what I'm also trying to get at here is, how do we become a little bit more adaptive? How do we create lives that are a little bit better at, you know, absorbing and evolving than, you know, like I hold on for my life and hope that I don't get affected by it?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, was there always 10, or did the 10 just sort of come out from what you'd already written?
It's so funny. I found a piece of paper the other day from that original version, and there were like four principles that were like general ways of thinking about yourself. And then there were four like practices.
Yeah.
So there was always the seeds of the 10, but you know, of course, a good editor always sort of steers you towards a good hook.
Yes.
And she was like, just, and I was like, no, I don't want it to sound contrived. And no. And she was like, yes, you do. It's fine.
Yeah. There's got to be that balance.
There's got to be a balance. And, you know, I've spent my whole life kind of in the world of change, and I tended to speak and work in that space, and it wasn't always accessible for a reader. And so a lot of my work with this book has been my own growth of trying to make something as accessible as possible. And so I, in the end, really wanted to write something that I thought somebody could pick up and move through. First of all, you know, not in a linear way. So you can go to permission 5 and just read that if you want, if that's useful for you. You can move around. But also it's accessible. I have younger people as a very strong audience for me with this, even though I know they don't read.
Some do.
Some do. I hope some of them will. But yeah, it's not a, I really didn't want to do one of those like 300 pages with, you know, lots of references and studies and academics. And it's like, I think we're all a little bit brain fogged right now and need something that sort of just helps us see things afresh. And so that's what I've tried to do with the book.
Yeah. And looking at the 10 permissions, any of them could be applied in terms of accessibility to everything from, you know, the everyday to big life decisions and everything in between. And that's probably the beauty of it as well, is that accessibility is not just reaching a wide range of people, but being able to apply it in a wide range of situations as well.
Oh, yeah. And thank you so much for picking up on that. I mean, again, I think having spent most of my life deep in the weeds with people, it taught me a lot about, again, and especially at this moment, I think a lot of us are very tired, very stressed, trying to dig deep into, you know, the sort of roots of our life and pull it up and change it. I don't think a lot of people have an appetite for that right now. So as you say, a lot of it is about, you know, start with where you are, start with who you are. This is not about fixing something. This is about developing a capability. This will be an ongoing practice for you of making choices that, as you say, can be as small as what am I having for lunch today, to as big as, yeah, you know, I've been in this city now for 5 years. Does it continue to sort of feed my growth and my ongoing evolution? Or do I feel that, you know, I personally can no longer sort of find space to stretch out in this place? So, and you get a workbook, downloadable workbook with it, which takes you straight into the everyday. I am a firm believer that most of what could be called personal development takes you into big, lofty decisions very quick.
Yep.
And I actually want people to build up agency, build up choice in the richness of their everyday lives and on the weekends. Not, you know, don't go straight for my job, my partner, my purpose. It's like, it's too much.
Yep.
Start with what you're doing today. And start to build that capability through some low risk choices and let it grow. Give yourself space to let these things grow and unfold in your life.
Yeah. And I'm sure, of course, it becomes far more sustainable in that way as well. Like you said, people don't necessarily always have the appetite to completely uproot their lives and transform it in a really significant way. But if you're doing little things, little shifts on a day-to-day basis, it becomes more of a habit than this giant life transformation.
Yeah, I see it as like muscle, like building muscle, choice muscle, permission muscle. You get used to it, you build it, you get stronger.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen too many people take on those big choices or try to fix those big problems as they perceive them. And if you have no lived experience of sort of navigating your life differently, then you just take the same issues to a different place, you know, in a different set of circumstances. So that's, you know, the job hopping or the this or the that. You show up to the next thing and it's like, huh, wait, this feels just like the last thing. Well, because you've looked outwards to a set of circumstances that you perceive to be causing the problem, rather than looking inwards at yourself and your own capability to make choices that sort of really serve you. So yeah, for me, this is just waking up to the power of agency and choice and will, and what happens when you start to exercise that in a more sort of vital and intentional way.
Yeah. And, you know, like working out as well. So you work out those muscles, the next day you're going to be a little bit sore, it's going to feel a bit uncomfortable. And I know you've talked about the power of discomfort, as not just tolerating the discomfort, but embracing it as a teacher. And I'm sure that, you know, the world is increasingly pushing for comfort and convenience and things like that. So I'm sure that can be a bit of a tough idea to sell, but I'm sure you have many examples of how leaning into that discomfort has led to significant long-term growth. It's sort of that short-term pain, long-term gain, age-old saying.
Yeah. Well, there's absolutely no way to discover a new set of capabilities, a new reference point. I mean, you know, the no pain, no gain thing is just, I am stretching out my sense of what I'm capable of. And it's as simple as that. You cannot do that unless you are doing something new. So novelty is such an important piece of this. And by that, I don't mean, ooh, you know, a new shade of lip liner, as much as I love that too. You know, I think it's more about, will I actively choose something that, and, you know, I recently wrote something on Substack, which I call the four fears, which is what we're afraid of in that discomfort. And a lot of times it's just the new. Yeah. A lot of times it's your own sense of capability. Will I be able to do this? You know, what am I, what if I try it and I can't succeed? A lot of times it's desirability. Like, you know, am I going to like this? What if I don't like this? Yeah. And then it's acceptability. You know, will I be accepted? Will I be, will there be belonging for me in this thing? So, and that's true if you join a course, you know, if you go to an online something or other, you're looking around going, you know, what's this going to feel like? And like anything, you know, the more you do it, the more you go, you're stretching out your sense of where your safety lies and building up confidence that you are your best safety. Yeah. So even if I feel like, oh, that was terrible, or oof, that was hard, I'm okay. Right.
Yeah.
And I go back to my own early years traveling in, you know, mini buses across rural parts of Africa, sitting there going, you know, am I going to be okay?
Yeah.
And feeling very uncomfortable over very bumpy roads and getting to the end of the day feeling absolutely exhausted, but kind of like, wow, okay, I'm here.
Yeah, you did and it.
I did it. And we need more of those. We need, I did it, I can. Not to build out this kind of grit that, you know, I know a lot of young people are like, listen, I'm gritty enough. I don't need, but actually you do, you know, you actually do need new experiences that just sort of stretch out your sense of who you are, what you're capable of. And those can be great. Those don't have to all be hard. But they probably, some of them probably should be hard. Some of them probably should make you feel a little bit, and that's how you know that you're ready to go and yeah, find some new space in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. That it shows that the growth is there. You don't learn anything from staying in your comfort zone.
No, I'm afraid the old cliche is quite true.
Yeah, they ring
as
true.
Much as we just don't want to air it.
Yeah, they do ring true. And I'm interested as well, in terms of that idea of stretching out and having that self-belief that and giving yourself that permission to do whatever it is that you're seeking to do. I would assume for women in particular, there can be more to overcome, and the societal expectations and double standards and self-doubt might potentially be more prevalent. So do you see women facing more unique challenges when they're sort of tackling this, and what strategies have you seen them use to help really break down those barriers and give themselves that permission?
I'm going to say yes, and then I'm also going to talk about men because yes,
it needs to be both sides to all of the conversations.
Well, right, because I think you're absolutely right that it's quite different. I think, you know, when I first started to talk about permission and I got asked to do it with a group of female executives, and even I was a little bit struck by, wow, okay, a genie came out of a bottle that day, with sort of that sense of trying to decide how you're allowed to behave with every room that you enter. That sense of always having to calibrate your own sense of acceptability, whether that's through your appearance, your voice, your opinions, your laugh, that I think from a very early age, women's value and currency is much more around their societal acceptability. And they have a narrower range, or a perceived narrower range that they're allowed to feel allowed to operate in. So when you start to talk to women about the lived experience, particularly I think in workplaces, but not exclusively. Of course, it can be the same in families or in communities. You know, there's this collective sort of exhale of, I have spent my whole life trying to, you know, and again, so much of it is implicit because nobody, most of the time, and especially now, nobody's going to say to you, ooh, you're not allowed to, you know, laugh that loud. I mean, I actually had a woman tell me that. It was like, she eventually found out that everybody thought her laugh was too loud and she was unacceptable because it was kind of, so I think the lifetime search for acceptability is utterly exhausting and draining on so many women. And unfortunately, I think scaling a corporate hierarchy, many of us have exchanged our genuine power for acceptability.
Yeah.
And, you know, never sort of fully leaned into, you know, what would it be like for me to not worry about what other people thought, to kind of come more into self. And I think that, you know, courage to be disliked is a really, really core thing here. So like anybody, I think it's a practice for us women to kind of come into self. I think with women, a lot of it is about our bodies.
Yeah.
I think from a very early age, a lot of this is sort of buried here. And so a lot of the work that I do with women is around sort of, you know, coming to grips with all the stories that you're carrying along with you, where you felt unacceptable and unwanted in a specific room, and, you know, kind of starting to listen in more to your own voice, to your own desire. So permission one for me is really important with women, which is, what do you want?
Yeah.
That has felt like a very dangerous question for a lot of women. So I do a lot of work with them just there, of unearthing kind of, what would it feel like to go after what I want, to be what I want, to just not feel guilt or shame for pursuing what I want. And I think that's really important. I just, in pivoting to men, I think, so I don't think, and these are vast generalizations and somebody will have a different opinion, but for me, it's not about the search for acceptability in every room, but I do think it's still about a fairly narrow operating space. You know, masculinity, acceptable masculinity is still a construct that we're busy, you know, it's unraveled like everything else over the past few decades, and now it's busily being contested by different people. And I think, again, I think a lot of young men right now in particular are kind of like, who am I allowed to be? Yeah. I had a really great talk with a stay-at-home dad who was like, you know, I continue to feel shame about the fact that I want to stay home and look after my kids. So I think it's different, but it remains sort of this fairly narrow space in which, for instance, not choosing conventional markers of success feels very risky.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't chase money, what's wrong with you? Why are you unambitious? So it's a different story, but I think it's still important for us to give men space and for them to give themselves space to kind of go, hey, does this work for me anymore? Or do I want to allow myself to explore what it might look like to, you know, create a life and a story that's more consistent with my own values and my own desires?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And having that authenticity, regardless of gender and life circumstance, like, that's only going to bring more joy and peace and benefit to you if you are being authentically yourself.
And I think to others. So, of course, you know, you talked about privilege earlier. The other criticism that could easily get lopped onto this is that it's self-indulgent, it's sort of woke. Who are you to think that you can create a life that reflects you? We're all just selfish and, you know, self-involved now. And I actually see it precisely the opposite way. I think we will be far better contributors and co-creators when we're tapped a little bit more into, how do we want to live? What do we want to do? How do we want to contribute? I don't think that, you know, filling roles that we don't actually want and sleepwalking through life in a suit is how we make our best contributions to our families, to our communities, to our society. And frankly, I think a lot of what we're seeing right now in the world is a legacy of that, of, you know, people who didn't necessarily feel like they could come out and be a part of creating solutions to some of our problems or offers that, you know, everybody wants. So, yeah, I think we're all better with each other and to each other when we feel a little bit more aligned with who we want to be and the lives that we want to have.
Yeah, it's to go back to yet another cliche that is true, that you got to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you can help anyone else. Otherwise, all you're going to be doing is putting your own stuff that you haven't dealt with on everyone else around you.
Yeah, and I think we all have lived that in our own lives. So, you know, I don't think it's selfish. I think it's precisely the opposite.
Yeah,
I think looking after yourself is the best way to prepare you to sort of show up for others. So, yeah, I think that's an important shift for all of us to make as we kind of, and particularly as we move into a world where people are going to have to be doing a lot of work on themselves, on their families, you know, as they navigate potential disruption in their work lives and everything. You know, it's important to understand that dealing with self and self-awareness is how you best help others. It's not some sort of indulgence that only a few get to enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a question for you in terms of, would you like to go through the 10 permissions, or would you like to just pick out one in particular that you think that everyone could take away as a starting point?
I think I'll pick out one.
Yeah.
What
would be your one? So if someone was feeling a bit stuck or unsure, what would be your, you said that they're not chronological, it doesn't have to be in the order, what would be your recommendation to start with?
Having said they're not chronological,
it might be like, number one.
It might be number one, just because I think coming to grips with your personal desires and wants is foundational for anything. And again, so often that gets elevated to these big questions, purpose.
Yep.
You know, what do I want to be when I grow up? What do I want to do? And, you know, your brain sort of shuts down in the face of what feels like this unbelievably high consequence choice that you feel like you should know.
Yep.
And actually, what I would love, again, is for people to start to engage with that on a much lower stakes, higher pleasure sort of set of choices in their lives. I think we're moving into a time where leisure is going to be more and more important to us. We've all, you know, squashed that out of our lives hugely over the past several generations. And I think now giving yourself the room on a weekend to start to engage with, what do I want? What do I want to do? What do I want to eat? Who do I want to see? How do I want to show up? And just observing that conversation first and foremost with yourself, and then with others, and then with a broader world, is like, you could spend a long time there. If you're feeling stuck, just sort of observing self, observing desire. What does it feel like for me? Do I have any clue what I want? What does it feel like when I say it to somebody else? Like, hey, I don't want that. I don't actually want to go out tonight. There's wonderful, wonderful learning and growth that exists in those tiny choices and everyday conversations. And I really think that starting in that space, that's where I talk about you start to light up agency. Mm-hmm. So it's incredible for me once people start to get a little bit more sort of in tune with their days,
yeah,
the ways that that has a knock-on effect to everything else in their lives. So I would honestly say just work in the very fertile ground, because the other thing is, you know, pleasure and happiness has this amazing effect on our ability to make choices and make good choices. Feeding yourself and saying, oh, I had a great day. Like, it's incredible the way that that shifts your perspective on what's possible.
Yeah.
So again, instead of going up to big decisions from a difficult place where you don't feel like you have a lot to draw from internally, I would say, you know, give yourself permission to just work on the edges of whatever your life is right now. And there's no rush. You've got time. If you are facing a big decision, you know, that's a different thing. But if you are just in a space of, huh, I wonder what she's talking about, and I wonder what it would feel like to give myself permission, I'm always steering people back to everyday choices, stuff that doesn't have to do with work or relationships, and then giving themselves the room to find their way there when they feel ready.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that is a beautiful note to end that on. I just want to say, obviously, we will include a link to the pre-order for your book, The 10 Permissions,
yes,
in the episode description.
Thank
I know
you.
That it's available for pre-order on Amazon. And we did talk mm-hmm. a little bit before about, at least at the moment overseas, we're looking at a September published date, but we'll to be confirmed with Australia, because that's just how it works around the world.
Yep.
But I just wanted to say thank you so much, Jill, for joining us and for sharing your warmth and your wisdom with us. It's been a really, really fantastic conversation, and I really appreciated it. And I can't wait to read the book.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Chelsea, also to you for asking great questions. And I just so enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for giving me the time to talk about my work and my ideas.
No, thank you for joining us and sharing those ideas. I really appreciate it. And Great. Have a fantastic day. Thank you for joining in right at the start of your day in South Africa, because we're running on different time zones here.
We are, but what a great way to start my day. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jill. Thank you for joining us on Plant Grow Reap today. We'll see you again next time.